Dear Venerable Bhante, Venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, today also we are going to start the day's Dhamma talk. May everyone settle down for the Dhamma talk and give the consent with three times sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතමේ ද්වේ ධම්මා පහතබ්බා අවිජ්ජාච භව තණ්හාච ඉමේ ද්වේ ධම්මා පහ තබ්බාති තී Dear Bhante, Venerable Sisters and Brothers, Dhamma Friends, we are proceeding along the particular sutta known as Dasuttara Sutta, and here Venerable Sariputta is introducing the fourth aspect in the group of two, that is, which two things are to be abandoned. So far, we learn three things and what are the most helpful thing and where you should focus your attention and do meditation, and what are the things you must be really thorough about. With all the three tools, what are the things you must abandon? So that means, before we go into the subject of this getting rid of defilements, we must have our tools prepared and ways and means prepared. With that, we must understand what are the things we must abandon, and namely Venerable Sariputta is nominating, indicating avijjāca bhavatannāca, that means the ignorance is the first and foremost thing you must abandon, and the second thing is craving for this existence or bhavatannā. So whatever it may be, generally we know we are fighting against this ignorance. So this ignorance within a life, individually or as a group, work in two ways. One thing is that simple unknowing, that is called appatipatti avijja, and the other one is misperception, miccha patipatti avijja. So therefore, as far as ignorance is manifesting, working in two ways, we must have two ways to get it off. The first one is simple unknowing. That is what we do. That is what we do learning in order to get rid of the simple unknowing. So for this meditation at this level also, you must have a fair understanding on the theory, and that is how you will get rid of part and partial of the ignorance, which is called simple unknowing. And that is how the education came into being. But the ignorance, totally you can't get rid of by simple getting rid of simple unknowing or by education, because there's another layer, misperception, miccha patipatti avijja. It's quite perverted, it's quite cheating and mischievous. So therefore, one to understand one's own misperception, it's a big task. Whenever you understand your misperception, it appear like kind of irritation, it appear like something defeat, appear like a backward thing, and unless otherwise you go prepared, you will never face it to it, you will never face to it, and therefore often you avoid it rather than confronting it. So that is why you must be mindful in the first place to understand this ignorance is double fold. One thing is simple unknowing that you can do away with by teaching, learning, and book knowledge. But misperception, only you can see when and where you are performing, when and where you are acting and working. So therefore, while you are maybe practicing meditation, in sitting meditation, walking meditation, and mindfulness in the day-to-day activities, you have to be vigilant and diligent to see how much our misconceptions are disturbing this simplicity of the meditation, and to get rid of that misconception, first and foremost, you have to diagnose it. And this very diagnosis of one's own misconception, even the Buddha indicates it's a very, very important thing. Lucky enough, the Buddha himself can see individual shortcomings pertaining to this misconception. But whenever the Buddha is not there, there is no other way one to detect one's own misconception. So therefore, you have to use the tools that the Buddha has presented. And while you are performing, you have to have a critical outlook or open-mindedness to see one's own misconception, and then only you have to appreciate your own understanding of your misperception is the indispensable. No one can help you. Others can do it in an informal way as noble friends, as co-practitioners. Others can be a reflector, just like a mirror. But if you are not sharp enough, or if you are not open enough to see own misconception, you will born with it, you will live with it, and you will die with it without any change. So much so, you will see the world through your misconception, so you will consider this as the reality, and no one can convince you unless otherwise you know the avijja, the ignorance has that two-way, double-faced, two-facet presentation. So therefore, whenever we become yogis or the practitioners, mendicants, this is the openness we try to develop through our innocence, through our honesty, and through our humbleness. We must be prepared to see our own misconception under one's own very nose. So that humbleness, that straightforwardness, and that simplicity only happen whenever you are mindful, whenever you are here and now. Whenever you are in the past, that means you are in misconception. Whenever you are in the future, it's rather fertilizing misconception and feeding misconception. When you are thinking about other people, that means another way you are fertilizing misconception. When we are thinking about other places, not here, these are the indications that our mind is more associated with association with the misconception. So therefore, first and foremost, you have to take a stand to accustom our mind to keep as much as possible here and now, and then see from that viewpoint only you can think about, you can perceive, you can diagnose misconception. But the thing is, due to the craving, due to the desire, our mind is not happy, not comfortable, not feel at home whenever it is here and now. So this ignorance as well as this craving go hand in hand. So it is not a single variable, it is not a conventional way we can fight these enemies. So that is how you have to understand when and where you become mindful, when and where you have the clear comprehension, when it is developing, always you must direct this mindfulness as well as this clear comprehension to understand the ignorance, to understand the craving, and that is why it is being called as going against the grain. Whenever you are not mindful and whenever you are not clearly comprehending or clearly aware, you are just follow the suit, follow the flow of the ignorance. You are just following the pleasure principle, the craving. So therefore, there is no chance for you to understand the cheating nature of the ignorance and the perversions in the craving. So therefore, mindfulness is very, very important. And if you are associating mindful people, it is also a blessing. That is why this group meditation and association with the noble friends, true people, important. So therefore, when and where you learn the techniques, learn the ways and means how to keep the mind mindful in a consecutive thought moments, or consecutive seconds or minutes. It is just merely not for the sake of mindfulness, but to understand how much the ignorance and the craving is working. So therefore, it is a pragmatic thing. It's a practical thing, someone to be aware. So therefore, we can understand two kinds of mindfulness. One thing is the bare attention, the mere mindfulness, that is just beginning, understanding the mindfulness, how to develop mindfulness, and what does it mean by mindfulness, what are the definition of the mindfulness, it is the opening the door. When and where you try to be mindful and develop the means and ways and techniques to maintain the mindfulness, then you are really making use or put into work this mindfulness in order to understand the ignorance, in order to understand the craving for existence, then your definition of the mindfulness changes because your ignorance is unique to yourself. Your ignorance is intrinsically changing from others, so therefore you have to develop your own ways and means to improve the mindfulness. The bare mindfulness you started is diversifying and it is taking its own shape as and when you continue with the meditation. And of course you can share with the other co-practitioners, but you can't copy. Whenever you're going to copy others, you get failed in the exam. That is how the human beings are getting failed in the exams, because they are copying others. But this mindfulness or understanding the ignorance, understanding the craving for the existence, mere by copying others, you can't do it. You have to have the quick wit. You have to have the appropriate technology. You have to have the then and there understanding. So that is what we are going to discuss today in the Dhamma talk, how and when we are going to use the already earned mindfulness in sitting, how and when we are going to use this already earned mindfulness in walking and in the day-to-day activities. As far as this craving is concerned, the Buddha in the very first sermon, he mentioned it is the single bondage we are perpetuating, this samsaric suffering, birth and death. He attributed to the tanha, yayang tanha, pono bhavika, nandiraga sahagata, tatra tatra abhinandini, seyati idang, kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. That is the phrase you get in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. And other many places also you can find it. And there the Buddha never mention about the ignorance, he just mentioned avijja, tanha. Tanha means the craving, and therefore the interpreter, they says tanha, the craving is like the mother, it's the proximate cause, and avijja is the distance cause like a father. If the both of them are working together, that is how the existence happened. And in a dramatic way, it says you have to kill your parents. You have to kill your mother and father. Then only the spiritual development can happen. So you have to understand how the craving is working, how the ignorance is working in the spiritual path. So when and where you are in the sensuous sphere, that means kama tanha, in the kama loka, or this sensuous gratification, you are in the varietal entertainment. You are changing your visual object by the color and the shape all the time. You are changing your sounds from different types of music and different kinds of things you are listening, ever you are changing. And smell, you are always chasing behind different smells, and you are ready to pay any amount. And the taste-wise, different tastes. And the luxury, the different furnitures, different vehicles, and all the kind of thing. More you change, you have the capacity to change, we call that particular person as a rich person. Those who have no much of comfort in the beddings and chairs and cars and vehicles, we call poor. So when and where we try to be a rich person, that means we are giving the varietal or differentiated entertainment in the tanha. So therefore, accordingly, you are daydreaming, fantasizing, pet ideas are growing like anything. So when that is happening, hardly any person can understand this is not the way for the peace of mind. But they are in a fight. They are in one-upmanship. So they are always fighting to increase the amount of visual objects, sounds, smells, tastes, and luxurious the contacts and pet ideas. But the immediate, if you are sharp enough, you can see immediately, very easily, more you develop, more you have these kind of things, more the tension, more you are in frustration, you more the mental diseases. So therefore, even if you manage to earn, there is no peace of mind, there is no solitude, there is no gladness in the life. So therefore, some, very rarely some people understand, more than that, they should have a peace of mind, they should have a solitude, and that is how you yourself see the disadvantage of this sensuous gratification, then you come to the spiritual line. It's a very big change, it's a remarkable change, and you can see the proportion. How little think on that way, instead many in our society, they are just following the social norm, society at large, and they are chasing behind the kama tanha. So whenever you come to the spiritual line, the Buddha mentioned that you seek forest under a tree or a solitude place. That is a physical viveka, or solitude, and that is how we people got together in this Chuanyin monastery. We were thinking about this solitude, or at least the physical solitude, and to make it more practical, we wanted to make it a mental solitude. That is how we come and sit in our cushion. Whenever you come and sit on the cushion, verily you know, this is not my home, this is not the most luxurious place on the earth, but I have gave it up and I came here in order to have the peace of mind. And when and where you try to keep the mind mindful, you can see how much it is difficult because of the bombarding signals and impingements, past memories, future projections. Think about other people, think about other places. They come in an incessant way. And each and every individual think, it is only for me, others are happily sitting. I am the only person getting distracted by these past and future thoughts. I am the only person getting distracted by the dear and near ones' memories and thinking about the places. But if you are taking part in the question and answer session, if you are taking part in an open discussion, you can say each and everyone, we all are in the same boat. According to the vocabulary of the Buddha, this is not the kama tanha, this is not the sensual gratification, but this is the kama sanya, that is the perception regarding the sensuality. Whenever you got rid of this direct sensual contact, there are perception chasing behind and disturbing you whenever you come and assume the sitting posture. Whenever you close your eyes, when you go to a silent place, whenever you are not entertaining smells, whenever you are not entertaining different tastes, whenever you are sitting without moving the posture, these all perceptions, sanya, they come in an incessant way, so much so you can't keep the attention here and now, even for a split second. So it becomes a challenge. So each and every beginner, those who are learning how to swim against the current, has to understand it and to endure it and strive through. Then only one day, happily you will understand amidst of all the kind of kama sanya or perception regarding the sensuality, for a split second, maybe for 1 second, maybe for 1 minute, you can keep the attention here and now. That is a breakthrough, that is the inception of the mental solitude. But you can't make it out because it has been covered, it has been disturbed by beginning and the after that, the normal nivaranas or hindrances or perception regarding the sensuality, hardly you can entertain this very thought moment of the mindfulness. That is the point where the clear perception, clear awareness, comprehension is necessary, how to discriminate the thought moment you are here and now from the thought moment you are in the past and the future, other people and other places. For that you should have a real kind of appreciation, real discrimination, that is to understand physical solitude to the mental solitude. Then only you can promote it, then only you can facilitate it, otherwise you are fertilizing to the sensuous gratification, self-indulgence. So you have, when and where you come to the present moment and delimit it, this is the thought moment that I am here and now. Before that, I was in the nivarana or in the hindrances or due to the sensuous perception. Just after this thought moment also, I am falling back to the same trap. But anyway, you have the potential, which is called a possibility. That possibility is an endowment of a human being, and the Buddha was the first and foremost person to recognize it. He understood, if you are well instructed, and if the candidate also with the correct perception, with the help of the instructions and the candidate, one person, a successful candidate can come here, be here and now, and one day will appreciate and recognize and clearly comprehend, now in this very thought moment, I am mindful. I am here and now. That very understanding, Buddha is waiting for you to recognize. Buddha is waiting for you to comprehend clearly. Buddha is waiting for you to aware clearly, because that is the point you start reaping the harvest. Otherwise, even if you are in the mindfulness, if you are not appreciating it, if you are not clearly comprehending it, no avail, no use, no benefit. That is why the Buddha says young children below the age of 6, they are often in the mindfulness. They are open in the here and now, but they don't know. They can't make it out because they do not know the frustration. They do not know the tension. They do not know this day-to-day friction. So therefore, they are not appreciating. So therefore, people, those who are in the friction, can look at the children and see how nice that child age. They are very happy here and now. But clearly, you can comprehend the child is not benefited from it. Child wish to grow up. Parents also wish the growth of the child to become a human being. And everyone is promoting this grown-up age than this childhood. So that is because that appreciation, matter of appreciation. So when and where are you being a frustrated person with the tension and this all the kind of mental diseases, when and where you apply your mind correctly to the mindfulness and comes to know, now I am mindful, for my understanding, is more than Nibbana. It's more than liberation. Because it is so abundant in the sense that we are not appreciating because of the ignorance. We have so much of ignorance, we do not know the liberation is so straightforward, so simple, so under your very nose. You are expecting so much of complicated formulas. You expect so much of methodologies, chasing behind so much of places and kinds, different techniques. Because that you don't know, being here and now is the gateway opening for the mental solitude. Even if you can go there, if you do not know how to facilitate it, if you do not know how to promote it, if you do not know how to make it consecutively more and more thought, means it's utterly on your responsibility, utterly within your capacity, you never believe. Partly because simple unknowing. You don't believe Buddha. You don't believe his teaching. You don't believe his disciples. You don't believe your own precepts. You think beyond these four, there may be a magical formula. There may be a kind of a blessing. There may be some other omnipotent, omnipresent person come and enlighten you. This is the way it happens. So therefore, you have to understand your capacity to be here and now is one thing. And with the very appreciation of the same thought moment, clear comprehension of that very thought moment, clear awareness of the thought moment, it is up to you. If you are ignorant to that, Buddha is helpless. Dhamma is helpless. Sangha is helpless. Whatever the precepts, whatever the things you are having, helpless because you don't appreciate. Yeah, because of your misperception. So that very misperception is with so much of layers accumulated through the eons of time. So therefore, by single thought moment of mindfulness, you can't cut off it. But it's a very good breakthrough. It's a very good possibility or potential if you are well instructed. If you are really geared to see things in the radical way and unconventional way, that is to say, you are your own savior, you are your own liberator, all the potentials are there, but they must be aligned, they must be geared in the proper way, you have to cut through simple unknowing as well as the misperception. And when and where you try to keep that very thought moment, that is to say the mindfulness, continuity of the mindfulness, unbroken mindfulness, the ignorance is one aspect, don't allow you to appreciate the same. Second thing is the craving, it always asking variety of entertainment. This sitting posture is no good, what about getting up and walk? What about the changing the posture little bit? And this object of meditation is very boring. What about changing the object and the change, the technique? What about the change of meditation center? What about the changing of the meditation master? And that is how ignorance, the craving coming and suggesting one after the other different alternatives. So you feel very poor, you feel very, very bored, you feel very, very lethargic when and where your mind is associating one single object. So therefore your crazy mind, your crafty mind, your defilements are thinking and fabricating and imagining, daydreaming, fantasizing so much of thing. So therefore cutting through them and to keep this simplicity, keep this mindfulness continuously for another split second is the whole game. If you can understand and keep one split second, one thought moment more, that is what we call not trying but striving. So now you know this is mindfulness. You know, as far as you are in the mindfulness, the simple unknowing and the misperception cannot work. But the thing is, you feel bored. You feel very monotonous. You feel very lethargic, very sleepy, very full of doubts, full of uncertainty, full of fear. So some philosophers, they try to recognize this as fear of freedom, fear of unknown. When and where the mind is be here and now, maybe for split second. When and where you try to keep it for the second split second or second thought moment or second thought, second or second minute or second hour, you feel kind of uncertainty. You feel something unknown. You feel it is irrational-like. You feel it is not supportive for your contentment. So this is how the avijja or the ignorance and the craving is going to disturb you. And you think, if you are not well instructed, if you are not not familiar with the practical ways and means, you think these things are external things. Your boredom can be avoided or removed by external things. Your monotony, your entertaining doubts, your fearfulness, your uncertainty, you attribute to the other people, other places, or other forces. And you think you are very innocent, very powerless person. You are completely succumbed to the situation. You seek help from the other people, other places and other things. So much so, defilements take the upper hand and come out with so much of suggestions and so much of fabrications, so much of storytelling and so much of fantasizing, so much of daydreaming. You can see today, literal world, so much of books on meditation. They are writing half-boiled because this is a universal question. Individually also, as a group also. So whenever you are not seeking inside, not seeking within yourself, you may read them and you may follow them, and they will come out with so much of lucrative methods, ways and means, but hardly encouraging you to wait split second more in the mindfulness. Instead, you may be entertaining, reading, talking, and seeking help from the outside. This is how it happens. So therefore, the beginner is in a hell of a fix. So not that beginner must not read books, not that the beginner must not read, listen to others, but which one is conducive and which one is not is the most crucial factor. So in a retreat like that, therefore it is being asked not to read literature, not to listen to the other people, just adhere to the timetable, adhere to the instruction. When you are practicing, whenever you feel difficulties, whenever you feel friction, whenever you feel not smooth, that means meditation is working. I am repeating, when you are practicing, if you feel kind of a friction, if you feel kind of a hindrance or heat or kind of a difficulty, that means you are learning little by little the truth of suffering. But if you try to get rid of them, avoid them, you are getting rid of your truth. You are facilitating your ignorance. You are facilitating your desire. So therefore, when and where the difficulty happens, see within the capacity of the mindfulness how much I can endure this situation and to understand whether I am here and now. For my understanding and my personal experiences, when the difficulties are there, when the uncomfortability is there, you are naturally mindful. Whenever you are in the happy mood, whenever you are chasing behind the pleasure principle, often you are not mindful. And you become socialized. You chase behind an external thing. So when and where such a thing happen, the beginner has to weigh in between these two poles, ends. So therefore, no one can seek the way without trial and error. There is no golden formula. There is no way to cut off all the missteps. So you have to go through certain amount of difficulties, and that is not a disqualification, and that indicates how much you are enduring and going through. More and more you go through that kind of difficulties, you are learning techniques. You are learning ways and means. Ultimately, they become your own teacher. So, understanding the ignorance is working in double-fold way, simple unknowing and misconception, and the tanha, the craving, also have many facets. Now you have to understand some or the other. You got rid of the desire to the household, your dear and near one, your other livestock and the treasure and all the kind of thing, you come here. So it's a great leap. It's a great achievement. And to gain the mental freedom, it is not merely by renunciation you can get it. The renunciation is an essential part. But after the renunciation, there are techniques in order to maintain this situation. And therefore, once you come to that kind of a situation where you seek the solitude of the mind, you have to follow the techniques, you have to follow the teaching, whereby keep the helm or the steering wheel to the mindfulness. When and where possible, try to be mindful. And when and where you mindful, try to verify it. Yeah, try to clearly comprehend it. Try to be really aware of it. And that verification and awareness, only you can test it in the interview reports and in the discussions. And it is also a must. So imagine whenever you learn the technique, whenever you learn how to keep the mindfulness consecutively in few thought moments or minutes or seconds, then there is another danger also that one must understand. For example, in order to get rid of this sensuous gratification and varietal entertainment, the technique the Buddha teach us is try to apply the mind to single fold object instead of letting the mind to roam around the so much of objects or the monkey mind. Instead of the monkey mind, when you apply into the single object, for example, we can say technically the primary object, when you are sitting, you try to be aware that I am sitting. Or when it becomes sharper, you can be aware my sitting is representing by breathing. I am face to face with the breathing, or I am face to face with rising and falling of my abdomen. That is your primary object. When you are walking, you understand your mindfulness with the help of mindfulness. I am not sitting. I am walking. This is my walking posture. And when and where you fall calm and collected, you can verify it. You can justify it by the pressure on the left leg and the right leg. And later still you can go further. The lifting of the left leg and the placing of the right left leg. Or lifting, moving, dropping. All these things are details to indicate you are aware that I am walking. And in the day-to-day activities, whatever the intentional thing you do it slowly, mindfully, silently, or one thing at a time, and that done well kind of principle. So you little slow down. When it is happening, imagine you develop kind of a relationship with your primary object. I would take the when you are sitting, you develop a relationship with your breathing. Anapanasati. When and where the mind is face to face with the in-breath and out-breath, that is a very clear confirmation, verification. You are not in the sensuous gratification. You are not sense perception. Now, some or the other, you started the clear foundation for the mental solitude or mental distance, solitude. So therefore, associating with the primary object, so to say, the in-breath and out-breath, more closely and repetitively, there is a danger that there may be an attraction to your primary object, attraction to your in-breath and out-breath. Because it is really, really helpful for you to get rid of this sensuous feeling. Really, really get helpful for you to get rid of this sensuous perception. And give a pivotal point, give a benchmark, give a reference mark, sure that I am now, I am mindful, I am face to face with the primary object, and you try your best to keep that primary object face to face. So there is a danger, you may develop kind of an affection, kind of a attraction to this the breath, the primary object, and that also part and parcel of your ignorance, part and parcel of your misconception. This attachment happens if you have a permanent notion on the in-breath and out-breath. If you think that in-breath and out-breath is hard and fast, it must be always with me, and it must be in the same shape, it must be in the same manner, so, your attachment can see when the breath is changing the shape and the manner, you get upset. Whenever some other object come and overpower the in-breath and out-breath, you feel upset. Your mindfulness is not healthy. It simply denies, telling that I am not mindful. That is a clear indication that you are now, instead of the sensuous gratification, now have a kind of attachment developed with your benchmark, developed with your reference point, the pivotal point, primary object. So at the beginning, in order to get rid of the sensuous gratification and the sensuous perception, it is a must. You have to develop. And while you are developing, if you are a concentration biased person, or if you are rather with the permanent notion, you can see when and where you are face to face with the mindfulness, face to face with the primary object, you are happy. You develop kind of likings. Whenever it is disturbed, not only disturbed in the sense of replaced by another object, whenever it is changing the shape, whenever it is changing the manner, whenever it is becoming subtle or gross, each and every time you consider it as a threat. You consider it as a kind of a distraction. You think it is the weakness of mindfulness. Or rather, you consider it as a weakness to your mental solitude. So that is the what Venerable Sariputta is really informing here and indicating here, not the mere tanha. It is called bhavatanha. That bhavatanha means your attachment to that particular materialistic object that you have selected in order to get rid of the sensuous gratification, that itself can be a reason to be attached or craving. So it's very difficult for you to not to have craving. Therefore, it is very important to know how much you must use this pivotal value or reference point or benchmark, and where and when and where you must be ready to get rid of that also. When it is getting rid, not to worry, not to distraction. It's a very, very subtle point. That subtle point only achievable by a person with a radical mind, not a conventional person. Conventional person will attach to this reference point, get attached to this benchmark, attached to this pivotal point, because it helps you to get rid of this sensuous gratification, help you to get rid of this sensuous perception. So therefore, attachment is natural. But this is just a tool. This is just a benchmark. It's just a pivotal point. So how, when, and where that you must be ready to deal with this problem. It is purely on the insight meditation, purely on the vipassana meditation. I would like to take two mental aspects in order to explain it, how to get rid of sensuous gratification and take the help of primary object or pivotal point with the help of these two mental factors. And when and where the mental, this pivotal point is enough, how these two mental factors are hinting you, now your primary object has done the job, so it is ready to retirement. You must try to get rid of, then only you can have a remarkable development, remarkable upliftment. So these two mental factors are called vitakka and vichara, applying thoughts and discursive thoughts. It is being heavily developed, heavily specialized in the Mahasi system. That may be the reason why I am so much attracted to that system and the Mahasi Syado and Upanita Syado. They are the most expert people I saw. For my personal, this thing is Upanita Syado. I have no much of acquaintance with Mahasi Syado, but when Jnanaponika, who wrote that Power of Mindfulness, had a very good acquaintance with Mahasi Syado, and he got the point. And he tried his best to define the mindfulness, how it is evolving with respect to the vitakka vichara, or applying thoughts and the discursive thoughts. So let me explain in a simple way at the beginning, and then we can go into little more detail if the time permits. The technique of vitakka is known as labeling and the naming. So It was there in the literature, in the Theravada tradition, vitakka and vichara, two mental factors out of recognized 52 mental factors. Vitakka is whenever you want to advert your mind to one particular object amidst of so much of objects, you use vitakka. It is called adverting of your mind, avenuing of your mind to one particular desired object. For example, when you go to the supermarket and if you wish to buy soap, you can see 1001 varieties of soaps. So, but your likings and disliking indicates this is the type of soap I must use. So you are not adverting your attention to the other brands of soaps. Your attention is directly go into that particular soap. For that, there's a name. There's a label. So if you can't find it, you ask the sales girl or the salesman, where is that label? And that labeling directly lead you to that particular self and you can pick it. And therefore, among the subject of soaps, the particular one is specified, make out by the label. Likewise, when we are sitting, sounds are there. Pains are there, thoughts are there, and other all the kinds of there. When everything happens, when you wish to advert your mind to your primary object, for example, we'll say in-breath and out-breath, you have to note it. When the in-breath happens, it is in-breath. When the out-breath happens, you note it as out-breath. So by adverting your mind, by mounting into that particular object in terms of labeling is a recognized technique even in the commercial world and even in the meditation. So therefore, when and where you have the problem of too much of objects, and if you know this is the one giving the mindfulness, others are distractions, then the just mere labeling or naming of that particular object, there's a more chances for your mind to go into that. So therefore, labeling and naming is a kind of a technique developed by or specialized by Mahasi Sayadaw and Upandita Sayadaw. It's a great master teaching you. It takes a few days how to name, how to label, and then you achieve your desired object. So, whenever you label one object amidst all the kind of thing, you become ignorant to the rest of the thing and your mind will be adverted, mounted on that particular object, and that is a very simple thing. And in walking meditation, if you wish to keep the mindfulness here and now, your attention, when the right leg is touching the ground, you not right. When the left leg is touching the ground, you label left. So when one day I was teaching this walking meditation and insisting how to advert your mind, how to focus your mindfulness to the left and the right, when I am prescribing when the left is left and the right is left, right, the one person criticizing and hinted me, by noting the left and the right, if you can be mindful and be clearly comprehend, why that army people don't go to Nibbana? They are also doing left and the right. And they are not going to Nibbana, so why you are prescribing that kind of thing? So likewise, the rational mind can find so much of child nature, but it's a simple thing. When you go to the class as Montessori, whenever teacher is writing A, and she will keep the ruler into the A and ask everyone to pronounce the sound. See the picture. And with sound and the picture, with your own voice only, you recognize this is not B, this is A. And then whenever she is, or class teacher is teaching you B, he or she will give the picture and give the sound and labeling B. And that is how you learn. And later only you put A, B, C, D, whatever the letters into a word. then it becomes a unit. When and where you put few words into one sentence, it make half of a sentence, then it make a meaning, and then sentence, and then you write a chapter, and then you write an essay, and then you find the theme. That is how everything starts with a simple letter and labeling. So whenever our mind is monkey mind, it has no aim. It is jumping from one to the other, very superficial, never penetrating. Under such circumstances, you have to just wait and see. Just take one thing at a time and adverting the mind. In-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. Or left, right, left, right. Imagine when you are doing it, thoughts are coming in. Sounds are disturbing you. Pains are coming. So if you wish to intensify this labeling technique, you know in-breath in two, three times. In-breath, 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 or in. Whenever the out-breath is challenged by the thought or sound or pain, you label it out, 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 out. Walking also the left, 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 right, 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 right. And whenever the mind becomes calm and collected, you can do it by the simple in, out, left, right. So then you learn by this technique of vitakka how to advert your mind, how to avenue the desired thing. So this is one technique you have to understand. This is not only adverting the mind into the particular desired goal. It never allow your mind to sleep. It's mobilize. It's releasing the slow releasing of your energy little by little. So therefore, keep it warm. So therefore, this labeling is one technique. But even without labeling, if the mind is naturally going, it's well and good. Don't worry about that. Under such circumstances, if you do artificial noting, that is what we call misconception. You have to understand labeling is for this particular purpose. If the purpose is being served, don't just be slave to the technique. Understand the technique in such a way. And the second part is the vichara. Vichara means whenever the mind advert, whenever the mind mounted on that particular object, verify it is not other object. That very verification, that very touch, that very tasting, that very association is called vichara, and that is the root cause of all the knowledges. Whenever mind is being mounted or adverted or avenued to particular object, usually mind never come back without touching, without tasting, without association. So you have to verify it. You have to recognize it. Whenever the mind goes to the in-breath, make sure, how do you know it is not out-breath? How do you know it is not a thought? How do you know it is not a pain? How do you know it is not a sound? Because that in-breath has its own intrinsic characteristic. In-breath has its own personal characteristics. Then and there are characteristics, that is we call the personal characters. That is how in-breath is different from out-breath. In-breath is different from rising of the abdomen, falling of the abdomen, thought, sound, pain. Likewise, you try to pick or try to pinpoint one single object and you know whether mind mounted upon that or adverted into that, and you know the taste of it. The tasting, the flavor of it has two facets, the shape and the manner. What is the shape of the in-breath? What is the manner of the in-breath when compared to the out-breath? The shape, you can see the touching point, whether it is on the left nostril or right nostril or end of tip of the nostril or top of the upper lip. And what is the place the out-breath is touching? And what is the manner? It is a inward gushing and outward gushing. And heat and cold, long and short, friction. All the kind of things are called sap of the Dhamma or juice of the Dhamma. These are the things we lose when we are jumping from one object to the other in a very superficial manner. If you know how to employ, how to apply in vitakka and vichara, the applying thoughts and the discursive thoughts, you try to experience, you try to associate that particular object little deeper than this superficial approach. So when and where you learn this applying thoughts and discursive thoughts, you develop kind of a skillfulness how to maintain your theme amidst of so much of varietal entertainment, which bombarding so much of objects, but you know where to guide. And that is the basic technique, and I would say that's the ultimatum technique also. So when and where you apply this applying thoughts and the discursive thoughts, it takes a long time, of course, for you to learn. And later you may find each and every time mind is diverted or adverted into the in-breath, each and every time it is picking more information. It is picking more shapes, more manners, because you keep the mind open. But the dangerous thing is your misconception. If you have the breath must be permanent, breath must be always hard and fast, then your mind is not open to see the changing shapes, changing manners. That is because of the misconception, so you have to have the open-mindedness. And when you apply, you can see the breath for the beginner soon after sitting is gross. When and where you focus onto the in-breath and out-breath, the body, the mind, the breath become calm down. Then you can see the shape and the manner of the breath, in-breath, is becoming subtle, unless otherwise there are some pains and sounds and thoughts. But after a certain skillful application of the in-breath and the applying thoughts and the discursive thought, you will learn more and more you focus on to your primary object, it's calmed down. When it is calming down, this very shape, this very manner is evolving, changing. Gives rise to different shapes and different manners. Ultimately, you may find within the in-breath, whole world is there. Whole world means four elements. Within the breath also, there are four elements. Heat, cold, stiffness, tension, rubbing sensation, grossness, softness, smoothness, liquidity, heat. Everything is there. More you observe, more you are to find all the elemental characteristics within the breath. And then you can see likings and disliking also then and there arising. But there's no chance for you to get liking into that disliking. You can see them happening because the situation become very, very, it's a flux-like, changing very fast. But you are becoming more and more proximate with the object, close with the object. And then you can see kind of energy happening like a boiling pot. Soon you keep it on the hot plate. It start no more action. But when it's boiling, you can see the how it is happening. Like when and where the in-breath and out-breath become very immediate, when and where in-breath and out-breath become very close with you, there's a strange thing happen. That's the point I just wanted to make after this long story. Instead of the individual characteristic of the in-breath and out-breath, more you become approximate, more you become immediate, more you see the flux. Now the discrimination reduces. You are bound to see there are common characteristics, both common to the in-breath and out-breath. So therefore, now you find difficult to discriminate in-breath versus out-breath. When that is happening, labeling become invalid. The vitakka is becoming a burden. You find it difficult to see the in-breath and out-breath. Both of them are happening in a like a flux, like a vibration, like a lot of activities, or like just energies. So when that happens, if you are not well instructed properly, still you try to apply in-breath and out-breath, then it is difficult. Then it is not penetrating because now instead of the individual characteristics, the common characters are coming. The flux, the continuity, the energy, the mobilized way. So there you have to slowly withdraw the noting, labeling, vitakka, and vichara is there. You understand now you are not away from the in-breath and out-breath, you are not away from the mindfulness, but you can see the shapes and manners are gives rise to this common character that is called santati in Pali, that is the flux. When the flux happens, you can see there's a kind of a magnetism, there's a kind of a proximity to your primary object, even outside, even the mosquitoes are biting, even the sounds happens. Even the rain happens, you can't feel. You get so absorbed into the object. And therefore, you must not entertain doubts. You must not develop any kind of uncertainty. Because you have to refer back to your history. How does, right from the beginning, individual characteristics and vitakka vichara work. And when it comes closer and closer, everything appears like a flux. And when you try to be there, to understand when the labeling and noting is not necessary, you must not artificially introduce it. When and where it is ready, you must ready to just be aware that I am mindful, but I can't discriminate in-breath and out-breath. So, sometimes Pandit society used to say, if you wish to note at that situation, don't note it as in-breath and out-breath, just note it as knowing, 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 knowing. Or not, neither. Just know, I know I am not dead. I know I am not sleeping. I am not unconscious. I know now the primary object has changed into the flux and it is more proximate. It is more immediate. Now the mindfulness is not the mere introductory kind of mindfulness. Now mindfulness is developing skillfulness so that it keeps so immediate with the primary object, even without the labeling, you can maintain this mindfulness. So when that happens, most of the yogis, it is happening in sitting meditation. Because all the other variables are fixed, so you can take the avenue. But after long practice, sometimes even in walking meditation, when you are walking in a familiar place, in a familiar space, then you can see effortlessly walking is happening. You can see the totality of leg. Just like you are pedaling a bicycle, you can see it is not just lifting and dropping, it's a circling thing. Both the legs are in the pedal and it is pedaling. Or like you are walking in a water at the knee high and you can see when you are walking how the friction with the water throughout. Likewise, the walking happens in an incessant way, not a wave-like thing in the lifting and dropping. So when these things happen, if you are not well instructed, if you are with so much of miccha patipatta vijja, or if you are not ready to let the changing to take place, you try to make it more artificial. You try to introduce or continue with noting, then again the situation becomes quite artificial, quite square in shape. You lose the development. So therefore, when the meditation, when the mindfulness is becoming more associated, more close, more proximate with the object, you must be ready with your knowledge or clear comprehension. The shapes can be changing. Manners can be changing. But still the mindfulness is intact. So when and where you try to see the elementary characteristics in the in-breath is equal almost like the out-breath, then you may see even the rising and falling happens. In terms of elementary characteristics, both are two actions, no discrimination. And when you hear sound, they are also nothing but elementary characteristic. Even if you feel pain, stiffness, tension in the other parts of the body, even then you see elementary characteristics. So now you learn the universal language, everything interpreted in terms of this element. So hardly you can understand rising and falling from the in-breath and out-breath. Hardly you can understand the other feeling in the body from the rising and falling. Hardly you can understand the difference between sitting and walking. Hardly you can understand the difference between sitting and sleeping. Lying down position. Because mind is alert. Anything happen, you are not looking from the liking and disliking point of view. You are not going to label them. You see the flux. Whenever that happens, your mind, your meditation is really ready to go through this tradition or misperception, and your likings and disliking, your personality traits and your habitual things, but it is not happening overnight. You keep it open, and when you are continuing, you can see this layer by layer how the ignorance is getting rid of. And whenever you see the common character, you have no craziness, no craving, no fighting for the lion's share, because wherever you think, everything has the same character. So slowly, slowly, the craving and the ignorance is removing, but your rational mind is fighting completely against this. So you have to keep it alert. When the meditation is progressing, mindfulness is progressing, your normal theoretical understanding, rationalizing and deductive thinking, always try to rationalize it and see this is against the grain like. So therefore your openness, I use the terminology that radical reflection is a must. So I am not going to continue further being the time limitation. So hope to get rid of this ignorance and the craving for the existence, you have enough radical reflection. And with that only you can go beyond this puzzle, this difficult situation. Those who go prepared will win. If you go unprepared, that is what you call the ignorance. So try to get rid of ignorance by learning as well as the radical reflection. Then hopefully you can see through this difficulty no sooner within this retreat. With that remark, I would like to sum up the talk today. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.